Two Bulls in a China Shop is brought to you by these great companies that are giving us money to let you listen to their stuff.
Bullshit, Kyle. We make this show. We make this show. You and me. Two Bulls in a China Shop is brought to you by us.
Someone's got to pay the bills, Dan, because it's not our trading.
All right, roll them.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
You are listening to an entertainment program put together by a company called Financial Ineptitude. Anything said on this show is not an endorsement or professional advice. Would you really want to tell a court of law you were suing us because you thought taking financial advice from two idiots on a podcast put out by Financial Ineptitude was a good idea? Really? Clown hat, smiley face.
Well, hello and welcome, everyone. Welcome back to the China Shop. We are so super stoked you made it today. Get on inside. I'm Shopkeeper Dan. With me, as always, is Kyle, creator of financialineptitude.com. Kyle, you excited today?
I'm excited today. It's not every day we get to talk to someone who's a tax specialist. The guy who is writing the book on how to avoid paying taxes.
The book has been written. It just has to make its way to shelves. I am proud to introduce folks. The wonderful CFA, Lance Baleen. How are you doing today, Lance?
I'm doing very well, Dean.
Lance, tell us a little bit about yourself. What exactly do you do? What is the person who teaches people how to avoid taxes? How are you not on the FBI's most wanted list?
Well, the short background is I started in the financial services industry right out of college, not necessarily because I had a clear vision of what I wanted to do, is because I probably didn't have great grades and I didn't network and intern at the right places. And so I kind of found the financial services industry by default, maybe by divine intervention, looking back. And so, over my 20 some years of career, I've, it's evolved and really probably took off and that as far as what changed my life personally and then also through my clients is at the age of 37, I formed a mastermind group or a think tank because not being the smartest person in the room, I wanted to try to surround myself with other financial firms and advisors that we could share ideas and best practices and concepts. And so from that, ever since then, I had an individual in that group from Seattle. His name was Rich Stewart, kind of threw out a concept to me, which I thought sounded absurd and illegal when he says, I'm going to show you guys how to take money out of an IRA and not pay taxes. And I was like, I don't think you can do that.
I didn't think you could either.
That's not what an IRA is for.
Exactly. I'm going to show you how to live off $109,000 of dividends from your stock portfolio and not pay taxes. And so I was like, yeah, that's exactly what I said. Came back, and I've had a partnership with the CPA for over 20 years. So I came back and said, Travis, wipe your calendar clean. We need to sit down. I got some neat things to share. And we spent about a half day using his tax software, I would say, to kind of validate some of these concepts and when the light bulb went off in his head, like, mm-hmm. I was like, yeah, this is real. This got legs. And so it's something, you know, I'm currently 51, something I've been implementing myself and our clients ever since. And the purpose of the book was I really wanted this to reach more individuals and have a bigger impact on people's lives than just, you know, say our network within our firm.
Are you worried that telling all these secrets is going to make the tax code change?
I am not, because this tax code has been in existence for a long while. And I'll give a little bit, you know, when the timing is right, I'll give the background of that as far as mm-hmm. why I don't think it, you know, it's going to create a radar or right hot spot for anybody's strategy.
That's good, because I do want to talk about like the history of taxes, since we got somebody who went to school and learned about them.
Well, I definitely have learned, mostly because, you know, my partnership with my CPA partner, and so in conjunction with the other advisors. But, you know, the tax code system is fairly basic, but at the same time, it's very misunderstood. And many individuals are not knowing how to take advantage of it, legally take advantage of what the tax code has been written.
What?
You know, in investing, and I love your podcast as far as, you know, strategies of stock investing, but I think the biggest way to move the needle as far as accumulating wealth is not necessarily a stock strategy or investment strategy that's going to get you an extra 1% or 2% or 10% return. But what if you can decrease the amount of taxes you pay by 15 or 20% on an annual basis for 20 or 30 years?
Yeah, that's the first time I think I've ever heard anybody explain our tax code as simple. In fact, I think one of my questions is, why is it so complicated? But you describe it as simple. Can you explain explain why you think that?
Yeah. Have you been drinking today?
It is 5 o'clock somewhere, right?
Yeah, right.
It's always, yeah.
So the tax code is, I think we are shaped, every American right now always thinks about the present day, right? How do I pay less taxes today or this year? Mm-hmm. And what you have to do is expand your horizon and say, how do I pay less taxes over my lifetime? Not necessarily in 2022.
Hmm.
So the tax code has two sides of it. The left side is your income tax rates. And there's 7 rates. The lowest rate is 10%. The highest rate is 37%.
Right.
And there's 5 brackets in between. And as your income increases, right, you step into another bracket. If your listeners, you know, are blessed to have incomes over $650,000, then their income over that's getting taxed at 37%. I would say they should be very thankful, right, that they have that opportunity.
Right. I would.
Yeah. On the other side, so that's the left side. On the right side, there's 3 tax brackets, and that affects the listeners on this because it affects their stocks that they are purchasing. Mm-hmm. If you're in the 37% income bracket, then your capital gains and dividend tax rate is 20% on a federal rate.
Right.
If your income is in the 12% bracket or below, which is, that means your income is $83,550 or less, you're in a 0%. You have a 0% tax rate.
Mm-hmm.
And the listeners that are in between 83,550 up to 650 have a 15% capital gains tax rate.
Right.
So you don't want to really qualify for that 0% tax rate when you're accumulating wealth, right? Because if your income is less than 83,550, married, filed, and joint, you probably don't have a lot of excess income to invest.
Right.
Right, you're barely paying the bills. But what you have to do is think in the future and go, hey, if I want to be financially independent at 50 or 55 or 60, which is, you know, kind of common ages, how do I camouflage or decrease the and take advantage of that 0% tax rate for the 20 years that I'm going to be in retirement?
Right. Okay. That makes sense.
And so it's kind of like a delayed gratification.
Mm-hmm.
I find many individuals actually think tax rates are really high right now. And they're actually not. I encourage your listeners just Google historical federal tax rates. And there's a lot of graphs out there, but they're going to find that tax rates in as high as 90%, 70%, 50%.
Yep, I remember the 90 years. I'm reading about those. I don't think I was alive for that.
Yeah. The Eisenhower years?
Yeah.
Yeah, when the government needs revenue, they get And I'm not an economist. I'm not saying I'm going to predict the future, but I do know our federal deficit's pretty high. I do know our social programs like Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, right, financially,
mm-hmm.
going to be bankrupt. And I am wanting to position my wealth so in the future, if tax rates are higher, that I will not be negatively impacted, or I can position my wealth so that I'm not having to pay those higher tax rates.
Before we jump down that rabbit hole, just a clarification on the capital gains rates. Is that an all or nothing, or is that a graduated income, like the income taxes?
Yeah, all or nothing.
Okay, so as soon as you make a dollar more than, what was he said,
83,550.
So if you make $83,551, then suddenly you're paying 15% versus zero.
Kyle, thank you for clearing that up. I misspoke because I misunderstood. So you would only pay the 15% tax rate on that $1.
Okay. That's what I thought.
So your first $83,550 qualifies for the 0% tax rate, and then capital gains or dividends above that gets taxed at 15% or 20%.
But not all your income is coming from capital gains. If you're the average person, like if you do have some investments and you're collecting some dividend checks, you probably still have a job too.
Right.
Like, how is that treated?
That your income plus your dividends or capital gains gets added together. So if, let's say if you have a W-2, right, from your employer of $60,000, right, and then you have capital gains of $50,000, you would add those together.
Right.
And minus $83,550.
Okay.
And that's the amount that would get taxed at 15%.
Okay. Simple, right? okay. So now let's go back down to the delayed gratification strategies that you were talking about.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, trying to convince anybody that delayed gratification is the way to go is the same as trying to convince somebody to invest. So starting an uphill battle at that point, it seems like to me.
Yeah.
Do you find people resisting that or having trouble planning that far in the future to see any results from moves that they're making today?
Yes and no. I say yes because we all want that instant gratification to pay less taxes today. So that's what we're initially thinking.
Yep.
But when you elongate that out and then they see the significant tax savings later, it's kind of like going through a diet, right? We all hate going through a diet, but if we know we're going to lose 15 pounds from it, we're much more willing to do it versus maybe will I lose 15 pounds. And so that's what I found. This, the numbers are so much in their person's favor. It kind of goes, well, this is a no-brainer. This is what I need to do.
Gotcha. So what are some of the strategies that you talk about then? What are some of the things that we could do?
Well, I think the terminology that we need your listeners to learn is, because it's an investing podcast, right? Everybody probably is aware of the term asset allocation, right? Positioning and buying stocks in different sectors, right? Or sizes. But I want them to have a new terminology that would be asset location. How is our investments located based on how they're going to be taxed? And so there's three, I would call them buckets, that they could invest in. And bucket one is what I call their pre-tax bucket.
Mm-hmm.
That would be like a 401k or an IRA or a deferred compensation plan, where when I put money in, it went in pre-tax.
Right.
So therefore lowered my taxable income, and then it gross tax deferred. But when I take it out in the future, that's when I have to pay income taxes.
Right.
Bucket two is what I call your after-tax investment. So this is where I take some excess income and I purchase a stock, bond, or mutual fund or real estate. And during my accumulation years, when I'm hopefully making a high income, that's where you're going to incur a 15 or 20% tax rate on that money.
Mm-hmm.
You're also going to get that fund 1099, right? Some interest income sometimes, right? From your financial institution.
Yep.
And your bucket three is what I call your tax-free bucket. So that's the opposite of bucket one. It's where I put in money after tax, and then it grows tax deferred, and then it's withdrawn tax-free. And that would be a terminology like Roth IRA.
Mm.
Roth 401k, health savings accounts kind of can get caught up in that as well.
Right.
529 plans for education, for college education.
Okay. So then it all becomes just a kind of a dance of how you allocate your assets between those three different vehicles.
That's right. And the goal would be, in essence, to have balance in retirement.
Mm-hmm.
And so let me walk you through a quick analogy. Let's say you had $1 million in each bucket, in your pre-tax, after-tax, and tax-free.
Okay.
And you say, hey, I would like to live on $120,000. I've now reached, hopefully, retirement age, and I would like to stop working.
Right.
So in order to get you $120,000, what I would do is I would take 4%, in theory, from each of my buckets. So that's $40,000.
Okay.
40 times 3 adds up to $120,000.
Yep.
The $40,000 for my pre-tax bucket is what is considered my new W-2, because I'm no longer working, so I'm not going to get a W-2 from my employer. But that $40,000 that I withdrew from my pre-tax is taxable income. So it's taxed like a W-2.
Like you made it.
That's correct. The government allows every taxpaying citizen what's called a standard deduction.
Yep.
That's what I use.
Yeah, that's $25,900. And that gradually is adjusted up with inflation. But then in 2022, it's $25,900.
Okay. Oh, nice.
So
last time I looked, I think it was 24, and I was really happy about that.
Yeah, it's going up. So if you take $40,000 minus the standard deduction of $25,900, you would get $14,100.
Okay.
That is what is considered your taxable income.
All right. And what about the rest of the money that you're pulling out then?
So then you would say, that is an important number, because if your taxable income, if you recall earlier, I said is less than $83,550,
mm-hmm.
you qualify for the 0% tax rate from your after-tax bucket two. So if that $40,000 that you've got from a stock gain in your portfolio or dividends from your portfolio mm-hmm. is taxed at a 0% rate, you now qualify for that 0% tax rate.
Uh-huh.
So 40,000 times zero, pretty easy math, is zero.
Right. And then with your Roth account, because that's already, you paid the taxes up front, that's also not counted as income.
Yes, yeah, tax-free.
So now you're making $120,000, but only having a tax burden of what, $14,000, I think you said?
$1,410, because you pay a 10% tax rate on that $14,100.
Right. Wow. Yeah, so I can see.
That's less than 1.5%, right? If you did the math, right?
Yeah.
1,410 divided into 120,000.
So then it really, it's just a game of trying to figure out where you're going to split up your retirement savings then.
Yeah, exactly. And the old school way of thinking, right, was because it was just what we were accustomed to, right? People are putting most of all their savings in bucket one. Right.
Getting
the immediate tax benefit.
Yep.
And then they accumulate, let's say instead of $1 million in each bucket, they accumulate $3 million in bucket one. And they want to live on $120,000. Well, they have to withdraw $150,000 or $160,000 or something like that in order to net $120,000.
Right.
And that keeps their taxable income above the 12% bracket, which is $83,550. So now they're paying capital gains taxes all their life.
Right. Yeah, I could see the problem there. So why was that the standard wisdom before? Because I remember when Roths started to get big, and I started investing in them because I could see the benefit. But they didn't really seem to have the same, like there's not as many opportunities to invest in those. It's only been recently that companies have started even offering those as part of their retirement benefits.
Yeah, you're right. And it was it's astonishing how slow companies took to amend or add the Roth feature to their 401k plan. You'd be amazed that when they were allowed to do it by law was in 2000.
Really?
Yeah. Roth IRAs came into existence in 1996.
Right.
Thank you, Senator Roth from Arizona.
Yeah, easy.
But there was a caveat. Do you remember the caveat and why they weren't really popular at the beginning?
No, I think I was just starting high school when those came out.
Well, there was contribution limits. They were very small.
Oh, that's right. Yes.
And there was also income limits, meaning if you made over a certain amount, you contribute to them.
Mm-hmm.
But the government knew, that this was going to you know, that could have problems in the future. So they limited how much you could contribute. The you know, it started roughly $2,000. Now it's up to right $6,500. There's catch-up contributions, right, if your listeners are over 50. But still, you know, you're not going to accumulate a lot of wealth there. And the Roth 401k feature, even though would allow companies in 2000, I'm in Northwest Arkansas where you have Walmart, Tyson, J.B. Hunt, major corporations.
Right.
They didn't amend their plans until 2019 and 20.
Wow.
And so people that, the nice thing about the 401k is there's no income limits, plus I can contribute a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Right, I can contribute up to $20,500 this year versus $6,500, and it doesn't matter if I make $1 million or if I'm making $100,000, I can still contribute that amount. And so that's why I think the bucket three category has not been it's not as new and it's not as known, and that's kind of why I think we're a little delayed, and why again it's something I didn't catch until later in my career.
And you said that you don't think that there's going to be anything that changes with that in the near future.
Yeah, I'll tell you why. The tax code is built to protect the middle America, right? The working class. And generally speaking, those are individuals who are making, right, less than $100,000 for sure, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so if the rich, meaning people that are making over $100,000, get a 15% tax rate, and the filthy rich have to pay a 20% tax rate, they have to have a better tax rate for that next lower class. And so the 0% tax rate has existed for a while. And it's because the government, in theory, knows that they're not really giving up any revenue. As again, we said, if you're making married, filing, joint, and you have a family of two or three, you don't have any excess money after you pay the bills and the mortgage and put food on the table to go buy a stock. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And so the government's not really missing out on any revenue.
Something seems wrong about that. That feels kind of dirty for some reason. I can't put my finger on it. Yeah. You have no money, so we're not going to worry about you.
Yeah, but they just, and they have to make it on paper sound like, right, they're getting a better tax rate.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's something that, exists. I think what was the politician? He was a Republican, but he got, exposed because he had an income of $200,000 or $300,000, but he only paid, I think it was like $20,000 in taxes. And that's because it all came from dividends and capital gains.
Right. I think Warren Buffett was saying something about that too, how he pays a lower tax rate than his secretary.
Yeah, I mean, if he lives off capital gains, he's paying a 20% federal tax rate.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and paying his secretary pretty well.
Yeah,
I would hope so.
So, if I'm accumulating wealth from this point forward, especially my younger clients and for your younger listeners, I would be accumulating most of my wealth as if I could in buckets two and three.
Right.
No longer bucket one pre-tax should be used. And I say, I never say never, right? But I would focus on accumulating.
Well, if it's your only option, and you really don't want to give away the company matches if you're lucky enough to have one of those.
Yeah, that's true. And another misconception is I won't get the company match if I do a Roth contribution in my 401k. That's not the case. You still get the match.
Mm-hmm.
The match goes into the bucket one from the company because they want the deduction. But your contribution can go in the Roth or pre-tax, and you'll still qualify for the match. So if you're working for a company and they have a Roth feature, I would strongly encourage listeners to consider transitioning to the Roth.
That's
and a misconception idea. And if you go do calculators, right, Roth versus pre-tax,
mm-hmm.
there's a saying, I guess, perception versus reality. The Roth calculators online will always say, well, hey, you had to pay taxes on that contribution. So you really didn't save, right, the $6,500 in your Roth, right, because you had to pay taxes on. You have to account for the tax taxes being paid.
Mm-hmm.
But that's in reality. They did put the $6,500 in. What they did is they just went without something, meaning they didn't, I don't know, let's say they don't even know what they missed because none of us can account for all of their income. But but they don't miss going out to dinner. They didn't sacrifice a vacation, but somehow they spent less money because their income, spendable income went down because they paid the taxes. And that's what I find is reality, is not one of my clients, when I had them switch from pre-tax to Roth, they still saved the same dollar amount and they never sacrificed anything. I go, hey, after a year, I go, what did you have to give up? And they were like, nothing. We still did what we wanted to do. And it's because none of us can keep track, micromanage our finances that way, right? We all spend on things when we have it. We just...
So can people from the lower ends of the net worth ladder, can they benefit from these ideas too?
Oh, they definitely can. But again, they need to be really good stewards of their finances in the accumulation period, right? Because there's not a lot of excess dollars. If the lower your income is, while you're growing and accumulating wealth. My recommendation to individuals that are, you know, maybe say, hey, I don't have a lot of excess income, I'm having troubles identifying ways to save. I have a story in my book about the $10,000 Coke, and all those an analogy is, I bet everybody sometimes goes into the convenience store, right? On a daily basis, they either buy a Coke or a coffee or something.
Right.
And that costs $2. And let's just say, an hour, and it could be more, but $2 times 5 days a week, right? It's $10 a week. Times 4 weeks, $40 a month, right? If they would save that, right? Not sacrifice that one purchase, which would not alter their lives whatsoever. Over 10 years, they would have $10,000 accumulated. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's something that, the lower your income is during your accumulation years, you just need to be more creative and thrifty as far as in order to invest.
And right. Hope you don't have any disaster in your life that requires you to spend money.
Oh, yeah, that too.
Mm-hmm. Great point.
Where can people learn more about Ross? Do you have any, or the different vehicles that you mentioned? Is there somewhere that they can go to that you think is a good source for explaining the differences and how to utilize these benefits?
Yeah, I would say my website is my name, Lance Belline, BELLINE.net. And on there, I have some resources that people can download. One of those is what's called an asset organizer. It's just a glorified, souped up Excel spreadsheet. But what it does is it says, it helps people identify what they need to do is, well, what does my current asset location look like? Like, what percent of my wealth is in bucket one? What percent is in bucket two? What's in bucket three? Mm-hmm. And then based on what I'm saving a year, what will be my future wealth, look like? And so they can kind of put their assets, accounts and dollar amounts in those. Of course, they can also go to our website of my company if they ever want to get some resources and free consultation from an advisor. My company name is Lighthouse Financial. So that website is www.lhfinancial.net.
LHfinancial.net. We'll make sure that's in the episode description as well. And then the book.
Yes. Yeah, the book, I have it all kind of spelled out a little bit as well, as far as going in a little more detail as far as each bucket and going through that analogy I just did as far as having an income of $120,000, right, and only paying $1,410 in taxes. And there's a lot more ways you can massage it as well, but those would probably be the best resources.
Awesome. Thanks for sharing those. Can we talk about a little bit more about retirement? I've had some questions that I wanted to ask somebody who might be more of an expert than me.
You bet.
I've seen a lot of articles, and this was even before inflation started getting out of control, telling me that $1 million is not enough to be able to retire. Why then do I see so many people who have retired with much less than that and seem to be doing just fine?
Yeah, I would call, there's two things, and two analogies I'd say. That one, that sometimes what you think they are fine, right, and doing right, mm-hmm. I call it a big hat, no cattle. So on the surface, they look like they're doing great, but in reality, they're not.
Okay.
Hey, that's just like me.
But it does seem like there's a lot of people that manage to survive on just Social Security, and then if you have anything extra on that, then... Is that just because pensions were a thing and aren't anymore?
They have a good I think they have what's called a good break. I call it a break and accelerator. An accelerator is when you have the ability to make money. Mm-hmm. A break is your ability to not spend money.
Ah, okay.
And so a lifestyle, right? It's you do not have to make or live off, I don't know, let's just say $200,000 a year to be happy.
Mm-hmm.
I have clients living off $60,000 a year and are much happier, right?
Yeah, it's probably less to clean.
And so I think it's about a lifestyle choice, you know, and knowing what that is and living within that lifestyle.
All right. What about Social Security itself? There's always seems to be those fear mongering going around that Social Security is going to run out of money or it's not going to be around when it's time for us to take it. But, you know, they say that every year and every year it's still there.
Yeah, it's not going to go away, obviously, just because the politicians are going to keep that and for right. The taxpayers are not going to, you know, be very happy for a politician goes, well, I think we need to take away Social Security.
Well, they tend to be the ones who vote too. So
exactly. And the baby boomer generation, which is, has right more retired, you know, every year more people are retiring from that generation. So I think what they'll do for the younger taxpayers are they're going to continue to delay when full retirement is.
Right.
You know, a lot of times full retirement, I remember 20 years ago, full retirement was 65.
Mm-hmm.
And now, if you go on, you'll probably see it's 66 and 6 months or 67, you know.
Yep.
So they're gonna, I think they'll continue to delay when full retirement is.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I also am under the opinion, I think if they need to protect it, they're going to raise revenue.
Oh, right. Which they've been raising the ceiling, it seems like, every year.
Mm-hmm.
I think I've only been lucky enough once to not have to pay. I hit the max where I didn't have to pay any more Social Security, and that was a really nice. That was a really nice year.
Mm-hmm, yeah, I agree with that as well. I think they're going to continue to raise the caps of what, how much of our income is going to have to contribute, you know, get deducted right from Social Security.
Mm-hmm. Do you ever just look at the benefits of taking early versus delaying as long as you can? Like, where's the cutoff point where that? Well, like you have to live a certain amount of years to be able to make that worthwhile as far as the total benefits you receive.
Correct. Yeah. Generally, there's a lot of calculators out there, but if it, in general, it's about 82 to 83, meaning if I take Social Security early,
mm-hmm.
right, at 62 or 63, if I live past 83, then I would have been better off from that point forward. From delaying, right? I would have gotten at that point more money from out of the Social Security system.
My contention with that has always been, though, what happens if you're taking it early, but you don't need it, but you're just investing it?
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that better than like
possibly
there's a cost? There's a loss of opportunity if you're not using that money and letting it work for you in a better way than Social Security does.
I agree, Kyle. Definitely could have that. Discussion or debate or argument, right? To take it early. And another thing you have to evaluate is life expectancy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you want to gamble. I mean, I don't know about you, but when I'm 84, 85, I don't know if I'm really care if I get an extra $500 a month.
Right. I don't know if I'm going to be around at 85 the way I live. But I also don't want to be, you know, 85 and also like wondering, okay, now what? I just spent everything and now I'm fucked. Pardon my French. So there's definitely a balance between the two, I suppose.
Yeah, there is for sure.
What are some of the things that your clients come to you that you wish that they knew earlier in life?
They had started saving younger, earlier.
Anything else?
That's the primary one I see because you cannot... You know, the compounding of wealth,
mm-hmm.
right? The rule of 72, which is like what rate of return I'm making divided into 72. That's when my money doubles. So a 10% annualized return, your money would double every 7.2 years. It is the best thing, right, ever for a but if you start early,
mm-hmm.
right, because that last double is worth so much money. And then, you know, now from this point forward, I'm trying to educate younger investors to, hey, let's think about the end game in mind. It's more than just saving. Let's save smart. Let's save strategically so that in the future you can dramatically pay less taxes.
Mm-hmm.
And then I would also follow that up with don't get emotional, right? This market is so unpredictable. You're never going to be able to get your arms around it. It's never practical. It's just one of those things that the only thing that is consistent is that 76% of the time, the market goes up and you make money. And 24% of the time, it goes down and you lose. And you just have to, those are good odds, right? If you were going to Vegas, you would take those odds.
I would, yeah.
It's just, we always get very emotional. You know, we're designed, we're created to get more emotional about losing money than making it. And it just hurts so bad when we're losing it. And we tend to say, I should do something. Like, I need to fix this.
Mm.
And your best strategy is not to try to time the market, not to try to outsmart it. Just stay invested.
Right. Unless you're willing to put in a lot of time and learning and effort. And even then, I wouldn't even mess with my retirement accounts. I don't even look at it if the day is red.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'll look at it when it's green, just because, like, yeah, it feels good. It's going up. It doesn't matter if it's, you know, less than it was a month ago. It went up today. That satisfies my emotional need to see the money increasing.
I know. It's the only thing. It's weird, right? Everything else, we like to buy things on sale.
Mm.
But with investing, we always like to buy things when it's full price or at a premium.
Why do you think that is? That's a great point.
I don't know. It is so odd. Like, you go into a sales rack or a store and it's 20% off. You're like, oh, let's go.
Right. Not.
I've got an answer for this.
Go ahead, Dan.
It's the same reason we have a cheaper version and a luxury version. People feel like they're getting something better if they pay more.
Uh-huh.
Like, look at your luxury car, your BMW German engineering thing that's going to break in 5 years when you buy it new. And you've got your Hyundai that's going to last you 15. Well, a lot of people, if they've got the money, they're buying the car that's going to wear out quicker because it's a luxury car and it's a status thing. So, like, by buying an investment at a premium, you feel like you're getting a better investment.
I would only, the only thing I'd change about that statement, Dan, is I'd pick a different manufacturer than Hyundai. Because my daughter's car, the engine just blew up on it.
Oh, well.
So yeah, I agree in theory, but maybe Kia or...
Okay, well, Kia is the same company, man. That's funny. That's funny. Oh, stay with branding into your brain.
Damn it. You got me again.
Yeah. Anyway, that would be my thought on that is like we were like, oh, it's a great investment. That's why I put so much money into it.
Well, and then it's also, you mentioned the emotions too. It's not just that. It's the, when it's going down, we think it's going to keep going down.
It's a bad investment.
Right. And then when it's going up, we think it's going to keep going up.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But then we also, it takes us too long to realize that, like, we don't believe it when it first starts going up. It's until it's too late. That's when we start thinking, okay, it's definitely going up. Now I want to buy. And that's when everybody else is selling.
And then you don't believe it's going to keep going down because when it first starts selling, like, oh, I just bought this.
Oh, it's a vicious cycle. The emotions of the markets. If you haven't seen that chart, Lance, that's something you should share with your clients. The market cycle of emotions.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. I have that in my book, kind of I call it an investment, a roller coaster of emotions.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It is a roller coaster for sure. And we're always usually delayed, right? And as you all just said, so when it's really good, we start overloading, start really piling it on. And then if it starts going down, we do the opposite. We start selling, stop investing, which is the opposite. You know, if you're accumulating wealth, you want to buy as many shares over your lifetime as you can. So mm-hmm. you want to buy them when they're on a discounted sales price, not as at a premium, but it's just not human nature unless you have a good discipline. And I think many people think they can outthink the market and they can pinpoint why it's going down or why it's going up. And in my 20 some odd year career, I would just say you can't. It's
good luck.
The couple of years that we've been trying to learn how to be active traders, it can be done, but it is very difficult. And it really is you that you have to that's the weakest link.
The people who are the best at doing it are about right about 2/3 of the time.
Mm-hmm.
That's about the best you could ever hope for.
Yeah.
And yeah, even 40% is good enough, but.
Oh yeah. Yeah. 4%. Yeah.
But that's a good point.
It's easier to do too when you're accumulating wealth and you're investing smaller dollars. But let's say when you get to real wealth, right, your last 5-10 years or even in retirement.
Right, right.
And you're trying to do that with a lot of money. It gets harder and harder to do, I think.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's also a good point too, is your time frame is what should really be justifying your decision to buy. I mean, if you're looking for, if you're not retiring for another 10, 20, 30 years, like it doesn't matter what the price is right now. It's going to be higher in 10 years. At least you've got history on your side to tell you that.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I have a lot of data on that as far as, you know, if you, the amount of 5-year, rolling 5 years, rolling 10, rolling 15, and rolling 20 that you didn't make 7% annualized. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when you get out to the 20 years, that's a 99% of all historical 20-year periods, you made over 7%. The only one time you didn't, you made 4.8%. So, but, you know, even at 5 years, 78% of the time you make over 7%, but there's also some rolling 5 years where you actually have a negative return.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I also feel like in retirement, I'm a big believer in dividend stocks. And, you know, you should just transition your portfolio to a dividend stock portfolio, because one thing, you can't use the word guarantee with dividends, but
no.
Predictability is definitely one, right?
You can increase your odds by doing a little bit of research on the ones that have been paying them through the shitty times.
Yeah, for sure. And there's even an index called the Dividend Aristocrats.
Mm.
You don't even have to research. You know, if you don't want to get into that, you just purchase the Dividend Aristocrats. And that, in order to qualify for that, a company has to have paid dividends every year for 25 straight years. Not only that, they've had to increase their dividend every year for 25 straight years.
Oh, wow.
What's the name of that fund again?
What's that ticker?
The Dividend Aristocrats?
Yeah, the Dividend Aristocrats.
I think I've heard of them before, but...
I've heard of the Aristocrats joke.
Oh, what's that?
Oh, I can't tell it here. It's famously the most filthy joke in the history of jokes.
Well, now you have to tell it.
It's a long joke. I'm not going to tell
it. Okay. You tell me off air. I want to know.
Okay.
All right. Dan, you got any questions for Lance?
Yes. Do you ever think that there's a situation in where it's a good idea to pay taxes?
Like that pause, huh? I
love that pause.
Oh, goodness. Well, we discussed in history, we have been over the last 15 to 20 years, historically, in a low tax rate environment.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
And so if you have a belief or concern that tax rate, you know, that we've talked, I don't complain as much about paying taxes today because I feel like tax rates in the future will be higher.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And so that's how I would say it's painful, but I would do that. And that's why but when you're accumulating wealth, Dan, I would say that you should, unless you're really, really good at it, because as you know, the tax, you know, when you're in bucket two, right, your after-tax investments, uh-huh. I think you should trade very little in your bucket two investments because you're incurring either the capital, long-term capital gain tax rate of 15 or 20%, or if you right sell before 12 months, you're incurring your income tax rate.
Mm-hmm.
I think you should do a bunch of your trading and the strategies you guys might implement in either your bucket one, but really in your bucket three. Because if you say, hey, I'm going to hit home runs. You want to hit home runs in your tax-free bucket.
Right.
Right. So that $100,000 grows to $2 million or something, and you're not having to pay taxes on all that growth. So I would just say trading strategies, maybe implement your active trading strategies and bucket three investments.
Mm.
Have passive strategies in your bucket two investments.
Right. Okay.
Well, bless you, Lance, for answering my joke question.
Well, that is something that you do feel pretty strongly about taxes being important, Dan.
I do, but I don't want to make the interview with Lance about my personal beliefs.
That's a good interviewer.
How did I do on that answer, though, Dan?
I thought you did a good job. You acknowledged and you accepted taxes, and then you reaffirmed your message of like, look, you can pay taxes and still build wealth.
Yeah, there's no You don't have to. He's not saying you're not going to pay no taxes. We're not looking for a way to completely cheat the system. We're just looking to make things a little easier for us.
Well, I would actually, and I don't know if you do this in your book, but I would also spin it as giving every man the power of somebody like Elon Musk, who can keep their wealth generation in shares. And
right.
It's not income yet, right? Like, oh, I generated that wealth, but it's in my Roth IRA. It's in something. So it's not taxable yet.
Ha, beat them at their own game.
Ah, yeah. Good job, Lance. Thank you.
Was that old SNL skit? I think it was Dana Carvey pretending to be George Bush, the first one.
Mm-hmm.
You can't tax the rich. They're too slippery.
They're
can't
too
tax
slippery.
The poor. They ain't got no money. Who's that leave?
Oh, yeah.
So it sounds like Lance is leveling the playing field.
Yeah.
Yeah. That book comes out November 15th.
Yeah, November 15th. And it's More Wealth, Less Taxes.
And where will that be available when people want to check it out when it does?
They can do pre-orders by going to my website, lancebaleen.net, and do pre-orders there. It'll also be found on, online, And I have a hard time mentioning Amazon because I'm in Walmart land, right? All my Walmart clients, if I ever say Amazon, they start shuddering. And so Walmart.com, I should say Walmart.com first, Target. I even get in trouble when I say Target, and then also Amazon. It's pre-orders available there as well.
Should we have Dan bleep Amazon when he says that?
That would be fun.
All right, Lance, anything else you want to leave the guests with?
A funny story about that. So we have Walmart land. And so that's our target market. And I have a notebook just writing notes, and it, came from Amazon, and they saw that. I thought I was going to get fired over it. Really? They're like,
oh, wow.
What the heck is this doing in here? And I was like, oh my gosh. So, and it's one of those things you don't even think about, right? Because are my assistants, just go online and buy that stuff. And so they used to say I learned from that, that example.
So when you say the Walmart, people, are you talking about like the family, the Waltons?
Well, Walmart home office is in Bentonville, Arkansas. And so I'm in Fayetteville, which is 20 minutes away. Right. And so my office is 10 minutes away. So all the, Walmart, home office is here. So all the execs and,
Oh yeah. Yeah. Those people, you don't want to be sporting Amazon.
No.
Does Walmart have a podcast app? We'll make sure we promote this episode on there.
Yeah, for sure.
Lance, this has been really good. I'm glad we had a little bit of technical difficulties getting started here, but I'm glad we pushed through them.
I am too. You guys have been great.
Yeah, I really enjoyed the conversation, learning some new stuff, some new strategies. I'll be looking forward to that book, More Wealth, Less Taxes, when it comes out November 15th. And also, if anybody wants to check you out too, they can check you out your website, just your name, LanceBaleen .net, mm-hmm. right? Or what was the other one?
Company website, lhfinancial.net, and that stands for Lighthouse Financial.
lhfinancial.net. We'll make sure all those links are in the episode description. If anybody wants to check those out, please do. Dan, do you want to take us home?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thanks for sticking around to the end, folks. We love you so much. Thank you, Lance. This has been a great, great episode. We're really glad that we connected and that you came on and spoke with us today. Some really great stuff.
Very honored.
All right. And folks, sadly, every day we open the shop, we've got to close the shop, and we've come to that time. But we will be back at you soon with another episode. And until then, happy trades.
Now enjoy these nice messages from Walmart, hopefully.
Yes.
Cue the ads.
Cross right. My fingers.
Two Bulls in a China Shop is an entertainment program, and all thoughts and opinions expressed in the show belong to the hosts and not of any company. They are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual or on any specific security or investment product. It is only intended to provide entertainment about stocks and the financial industry of trading. If you make trades based on what you hear in this show, you assume all risks for those trades.